What about climate change? It's so confusing. Which is it? Are we warming or cooling? What are ozone holes? And what about sea level rise? Do we really have to worry about all this? It seems pretty obvious. Things are changing with bigger and more frequent hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, and more devastation every year. What are we in for? This week on Reality Check, we will explore the answer to these questions and more with Ed Patterson and Deborah Wirth, climate change activist on Reality Check on KCIW. I'm Lee Tooley, the host, and we have with us Ed and Deborah. You want to say hello?
Hi.
Hello.
And I guess we could just start with, you know, what are the answers to these questions? I mean, do the scientists finally, are they kind of coming to consensus on anything? What's the take these days?
I think the scientists have essentially always had a consensus. Over the years, I've not seen a deviation in their kinds of predictions. The only change that is really noticeable is that things are happening faster than they predicted. I want to deal with a couple of terms to be sure that we're on the same page here.
Sounds good.
I usually talk about global warming, and global warming is due to the fact that we have large concentrations of gas, primarily carbon dioxide, in our atmosphere, much greater than humans have ever experienced. That gas is causing a heating effect on the Earth. Now, the heating effect doesn't affect the climate in the same way in all places. Mm-hmm. There was a talk show host that said, a few years ago, Chicago just experienced the coldest day on record. Therefore, there's no such thing as climate change.
Exactly. That's why I think people have chosen the word climate change instead of global warming, but it really is warming.
It's global warming is the overall effect, and it is changing the climate. Now, one of the things that global warming does is it causes the ocean to heat, which changes the currents in the ocean, and that changes our weather. Mm-hmm. It changes the El Niños, it changes all of the terms that you mentioned, the hurricanes and things. Mm-hmm. I will say that global warming does not cause more hurricanes. What it does cause, because of the heating of the ocean, it causes those hurricanes to pick up much, much more moisture and become much more terrible than they were before.
So it's not so much that there's more hurricanes, but they're greater in intensity.
Yes.
But doesn't that still sort of amount to the same thing when you have tropical storms that are now more intense, so then they get graded as hurricanes? Or is that just a moot point? You see what I'm saying?
No, I think that's exactly what's happening. They do become more furious because of the heated water and the environment they're in. The other thing that global warming does, climate change does, is it forces these hurricanes to stay longer in one place, which tends to drop. Their moisture is very, very heavy, and they tend to stay longer in one place, which really causes a lot of problems, a lot of flooding. And we've seen that the last couple of years in the hurricanes that have hit the southern part of the United States.
Well, nerd question here. Why are they staying in the same place? I don't quite get that. Or is it just too complicated?
It's geography.
Geography.
Yes.
Okay. We have a geographer.
And I'm a geographer
here. Can you explain that?
Well, you've got a coastal community where you've got a continent, and you've got the warm oceans lifting up all this moisture, and it spins around. Everything with the climate is distribution of heat.
Okay.
And we did talk about that in the 90s as to whether or not it's really, should we call it climate change? Should we call it global warming? And I think climate change is a better definition.
Well, politically, I think it works better. People are more accepting
people
that,
understand it better.
Yeah.
But with the climate change, you're going to see a lot of changes in the ocean currents.
Mm-hmm.
And London is on the same latitude as Nova Scotia.
Right.
Paris is farther north than Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
If the warmer current gets turned off, Europe is going to be a lot colder.
I remember there was the Little Ice Age in the Middle Ages.
1400s, 1500s, and the Thames froze over.
I know.
Yeah.
They were having all kinds of ice parties out there and things like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it
was
a really bad time.
Volcanic activity.
Yeah. That, I think that was one of the, I can't remember now. It seems like that was at least one of the major reasons. But it was a bad time. There was famines. People starved to death. Yeah. They and couldn't that's when grow the, crops.
And that's when the pilgrims came to North America.
Oh, yeah. All kinds of things happened on account of that, as I recall.
British bad timing.
Yeah. And it became, now, I mean, that was kind of, some people thought even the plagues that came through at that time were because the population, pardon me, was already so weakened that everybody was so susceptible. And so then that set off all these political changes where there weren't enough peasants left.
Right.
And so the aristocrats had to actually become more amenable to peasants' rights and concerns because there weren't enough of them to work the land. So it started this whole democratization in a way. And in a way, the rise of the Renaissance.
It's funny because it really did have a big jump start. And it's also kind of strange that it's so political now, talking about climate change.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be a political aspect of it, but there is.
Well, what I've heard is that, people agree that the climate is warming, but they don't agree on whether or not it's caused by humans. Well, is that pretty much the state of affairs in terms of the argument that's left? And do we really care if it's
really
caused by humans?
There really should not be an argument. It's happening. Yeah. It's human. There's climate changes naturally, yes.
There's
a sine wave. But what we're doing is we're putting an added emphasis on top of it because of our activity. And, you know, even if people think that the ocean's rising because rocks are falling in, that's not true. The consensus of all the credible scientists is that this is happening and we're making it worse.
Yeah.
And you can see that if you track the amount of carbon dioxide that is being emitted, and carbon dioxide right now is the greatest source for the heating. If you track the amount of carbon dioxide that is being emitted and the rise in the Earth's temperature, they track exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's a jam.
So there's no question left amongst the scientists as to where this is coming from. It is not a normal Earth cycle. It is not because the Earth is spinning incorrectly. Those things have been debunked many times. The one of the key features, if you go to the doctor is going to take your blood pressure and he's going to stick a thermometer in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that to the Earth every day or over a long period of time, what we're going to find is an analogous situation. The Earth temperature is rising and is going to continue to rise. It's about 1.2 degrees Celsius greater than it was in the early part of the 20th century, or when they say the industrial era started.
That's what I kind of remember, just as an aside.
We have a fever.
That the tracking of the temperature increasing was really coincident with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we started burning
fossil fuels. Yeah.
As far as the blood pressure, my analogous statement to that is that that's the carbon dioxide in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And so a good measure of where we are is looking at the carbon dioxide in the air. It right now, today, it's 411 parts per million. So what? The average before the human race came around was around 200 to 250 parts per million. So we can see we're much, much greater than what the average used to be. But another point that's worth making and very important is that the rise is increasing. We are not just growing more, the rate at which we are growing more is increasing. Now, how can that happen? We're doing a lot of things to prevent carbon dioxide from going into the atmosphere. We're building many solar panels and windmills and things like that to stop the production of carbon dioxide, and it's growing. And what the scientists think is happening is that the ocean absorbs a lot of the carbon dioxide, and as a side point, becomes more
acidic.
Acidic?
Acidic.
Very acidic.
We can talk about that later.
Yeah.
But they're feeling, the articles I've read, they're feeling that the ocean is saturated and cannot hold any more carbon dioxide.
But also there's evaporation, right, which would release it. If it's going to be warm, it's going to release more? Or am I...
Well, we used to think that the ocean was an unfillable sink.
Yeah.
And all, you just throw everything in the ocean. That's not true.
Okay.
The ocean is very sick.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of dead zones.
Not just dead zones. The whole ocean is sick. It can't hold any more CO2. It can't hold anymore.
Oh, okay.
That's one theory, and it seems to be holding true right now. Yes, the ocean is sick. We're losing an awful lot of the ocean's environment. Particularly in trouble are the coral reefs.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The heat, the coral reef cannot take a very much increased temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And the acidity of the ocean also attacks the coral reefs. So they are dying all over the world. There are places which they're growing artificial coral reefs and hoping to reconstitute some of the mm-hmm. ones that are lost. Don't have any information as to whether that's going to be acceptable. But what we have to realize is that the coral reef is the home of a very large percentage of what lives in the ocean.
It it's either lives in the ocean food chain.
Yeah.
The ocean food chain.
Yeah. It's the
it either lives
the
there or it breeds there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sharks go around the coral reef right. all the time looking for food. Now, one statement I heard was that about 25% of all of the ocean's population comes from the coral reefs or lives in the coral reefs. That's a huge amount. If we're killing the coral reefs, that's a huge amount.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And locally, anything that develops a shell
mm-hmm.
to survive is in very much big trouble. Like the crab,
shell is
the
dependent
crab
on
calcium carbonate.
And it doesn't get deposited.
It's no longer
the coral
being
reefs
deposited. Or... It's no longer, it can't be uptake, they can't uptake it into their system.
So you mean the shellfish can't suck up the calcium
there.
Because of the acidity or something?
Because it's too acidic, there's not enough calcium. So anything that has a shell, like crab, or any other shellfish. I know, I'm sorry, but they're going to be gone.
Well, we've had a terrible season here, too.
And that's going to be the norm.
Part of that is because it's warmer and the algae grew more or whatever that thing is that keeps people from eating it.
The dionic acid, I'm sure,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm pronouncing
that's what
it right.
Is.
But yeah, that's also going to be get
a byproduct.
Worse. It's going to get worse.
Yeah, so farther north, they did better than we did.
But it's going up north.
But
it's
going that way,
north.
Sure. Yeah.
It started in California,
mm-hmm.
now it's here, and it's going to be all the way up the coast.
Oh, my gosh.
I like crab, too.
I seem to remember something about that there was also carbon dioxide in the ice, and the ice is melting. Is that
the permafrost.
A true story?
It's the permafrost.
Oh, the permafrost.
And it's also methane released as well.
Which is not good.
So when the permafrost melts... completely melts,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be a very bad day to be around.
And then there's also the deforestation is a factor too, isn't it?
Yes, because the forest is sick. The forest is got bark beetle infestations. There's a cedar kill that once you see the tree has got a couple of brown needles, the tree is dead.
And pine,
and they, so they can't absorb all the pollution because they're dying too.
But also like the Amazon rainforest, which is responsible for a huge amount of oxygen production, mm-hmm. is being cut down. And
right, they've cut that down for palm oil, cattle.
Well, it's just land to farm on and so forth too. Yeah,
and the bottom line is there's too many people on the planet for the planet to
that's what
support
they say.
Everyone in the manner that we've gotten accustomed to.
Well, we're 7 billion, I think,
right.
And I think I heard somewhere we 7. Could support
2,
about
7.3, I think, is what it really is right now.
How many?
7.2 to 7.3.
Oh. And we can only support 6 at a max, something like that.
Yeah, we're over what we should be.
Definitely over. Definitely. So, okay, we started to talk about the sources of the CO2 and the various gases that are causing this. What are the most important ones, like percentage-wise or whatever? Can you speak to that? Have we left out any other sources that are really important?
The internal combustion engines are a pretty nasty one.
Our factories, I suppose.
I would say transportation is the number one developer of carbon dioxide. And just to give you a feeling, if somebody is interested in what they're producing, 1 gallon of gasoline, when burned, produces 20 pounds of carbon dioxide.
That sounds like a lot.
It is.
It sounds like a lot, but let me add to that. Let's say that you drive 12,000 miles a year, not an extreme amount, and let's say your car gets 30 miles to the gallon. That's 800 gallons of gas. At 20 pounds per gallon of gas, that's 16,000 pounds of carbon dioxide.
And just because it's a gas doesn't mean it doesn't have mass.
4 tons. And you just described my car and my life.
And we all have cars, and we all have transportation issues.
Let's put that into another perspective. If you take the entire population of the Earth and we say, okay, how much carbon dioxide can we produce and be sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
Not cause any more rise in temperature.
Yeah.
Let the Earth live. It's less than 2 tons per person.
And just our cars are doing 4. So then we come to the subject of carbon footprint. I was once in a program, was called the Leadership Institute for the Economy and Ecology or something to that effect. Anyway, nice program. And anyway, we did our carbon footprints. And at the time, I was experimenting with different living situations, mm-hmm. and I was in a very small 450-square-foot house, I guess. And of all the people in the group, there was like 20 or 30 of us, I had the lowest carbon footprint. I was about similar to a Mexican peasant.
That's not easy to do anymore.
But I think the only reason was, is I lived in such a small square footage of home.
Right, we have big square footage homes.
Because everything else I did kind of like in a normal way. But I was doing this sort of experiment about how small can I go, and 400 was pretty small. But anyway, so when you do your carbon footprint, do you think that's one of the main things, is the square footage of your home, or can
it's
you give people a sense, and maybe we should even define what a carbon footprint is.
Well, isn't there different carbon footprint calculators? Even that is somewhat flexible.
Oh, I bet.
But if you have like a Prius or an electric car, that electricity comes from someplace.
That's right.
It's got to come from someplace. You have to count it. So it's not as easy as just, you know, getting an electric car and getting a small house. There's so much to it.
The carbon footprint really represents the amount of carbon dioxide you, as an individual, Lee, are putting out into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And what you did is it took a lot of information about your lifestyle, and it said to you, this is what you're putting into the atmosphere as a result of the size of a house, the lights that you have burning. Do you use LEDs, or do you use fluorescent lights? Are you using an electric car, or are you using a very economy car? All of those factors are taken into account.
Right.
Now, the carbon footprint calculators have become very sophisticated. And if a person is interested in determining what they're contributing, all they have to do is to type into a search engine, Google, carbon footprint calculator. Just type those three words in and you'll find dozens of them.
Mm-hmm. They're all slightly different,
couple,
but they're all kind of the same.
There's a couple that are extremely good, and if I could mention those.
Sure, and can we mention them kind of at the end, too, so if people have a chance to get some paper and pencil together? But ahead and do it now, too, so look at it both ways.
Okay, so there's three that I like to use. One is www.carbonfootprint.com.
Mm-hmm.
Can remember that one.
Easy.
www.nature.org. And the last one is www.3.epa.gov. Now, there's a problem with the last one because the Environmental Protection Agency is removing all reference to climate change from its website.
And the calculator is gone.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
I think so.
I checked this morning, and the calculator was still being shown. Now, whether it's working or not, I don't know, because they are trying to purge the system. And it was a very good calculator. There's two things you can get out of a calculator. One is the total amount of carbon dioxide that you're putting out as an individual. And two, where it's coming from, because a carbon calculator will show you by step the amount of gasoline you're using, the amount of lights you're using, and if it's very thorough, it's going to talk about how you take care of your garbage, what kind of clothes you buy, and it'll take all those things into account so you can have an actual idea of not only what you're contributing, but where it's coming from.
Where you're really contributing. Handy. Yeah. Because I try to buy things at thrift stores because it's been used once, I'm using it again.
Right. So recycling is one of those things that
reusing,
people can really
can,
contribute by
you
embracing.
Can only recycle and reuse so much. You're yeah. still going to be over the 2 million number? I'm sorry.
The 2 tons a year.
2 tons a year.
You're tons a year.
There's no way in our modern society you can do it.
Oh, I know. I know one of the things that seems to be happening is that urban planning, the younger people, thank goodness for them, they don't want to drive cars anymore. They want to move back into the inner city.
They want mass transit.
And have mass transit and get away from using cars. I mean, the whole Uber idea is part of that, or sharing bicycles and so forth. And that, I hope, makes a difference. But getting down to 2 tons a year, I bet that's pretty tough.
I think it's nearly impossible now. In a small town like Brookings, if you live in a big city, you might be able to get there, sort of.
Yeah.
If you live a pretty low-key lifestyle. But everything comes in here. Everything's shipped in here.
So you
gotta count that too. Transportation. It counts.
And I think of, as an older person, what if I ever lose my license? I mean, how could I possibly live here and not have a license? I mean, okay, maybe I sound kind of spoiled because I know there are resources, but what a complete change in lifestyle that would mean here in Brookings.
The house we chose is a smaller house. It's under 1,400 square feet, so it's not a 2,400 square foot house.
Right.
We have walkable conditions here in Brookings. And I noticed they're doing more for bikes, which is nice. Mm-hmm. They're getting people out of the car.
Yeah.
Because the car has been central to the world right now. And if you want to survive in Brookings, almost you have to have a car.
Pretty much. Thankfully, our inner city here is very small, so you can do your errands within a few blocks of each other. It's one good thing. But if you live out of town, you're going to rack up those miles.
And that all counts.
Yeah. Just as an aside, to pick up a stitch we dropped a little while ago, I used to hear that cows were producing all this methane, and that was part of the problem.
It is
a problem.
Is that
a significant part?
Yes, it is.
So being vegetarians,
there's a lot of cows.
Yeah, tons. And, of course, they're not the most efficient use of resources anyway, taking all that vegetable matter to make steaks.
So vegetarianism is a very good choice.
One of the problems with methane is, yes, methane comes from cows, but it also comes from drilling for gas. There is methane escaping.
Permafrost.
And Deb mentioned earlier the permafrost is melting up in the Arctic.
Yeah.
And that is trapping millions of tons of methane. If that permafrost finally goes, that methane is going to go into our atmosphere. Methane is 50 times as heat trapping as carbon dioxide.
Oh my goodness.
So scientists talk about tipping points. And one of the tipping points that they're worried about is if the Earth's average temperature reaches 2 degrees Celsius, they're worried that we're going to be in a non-returnable mode.
That's 2 degrees over what it was.
Oh, we are over where we are now, so around 4.
We're at 1.2 right now.
Okay.
But nobody that I have read recently thinks we're going to meet the 2 degree point. We have all the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that even if we do marvelous things now and cut our carbon emissions, that stuff is going to stay here for 2 centuries.
It doesn't just go away.
It doesn't just blow away.
Yeah.
There's no
methane,
way.
Methane dies off an awful lot faster, but it's 50 times as bad, as I mentioned, as carbon dioxide as far as heat treating. So it could do a tremendous amount of damage in a very short part of time. So yeah, the cows and other sources of methane. Another thing they're worried about, and they haven't found this, but they're worried that there are methane bubbles way down in the ocean.
Oh yeah, I've heard that in the ocean, but also I've heard these things where this methane blows up out of a lake or something and kills all the villagers around.
There are a lot
around
of methane lakes, but they're usually volcanic. And if they do turn over, which has happened.
Yeah.
They release the gas and it's a silent killer. People die in their sleep.
And the methane comes, and the same with the permafrost. The permafrost is basically frozen bog. It's like all this vegetable matter that's just down there frozen, and that decomposing process is what creates the methane. And you were just going to say, and we interrupted you about...
No, you're exactly right.
You mentioned about the ozone holes. And, yeah, and they were getting about better for so anymore. Many years, but now they're starting to get worse.
Oh, that's why they were out of the news for so long, huh?
But they're starting to come back because of the fluorocarbons.
Uh-huh.
People are relaxed a little bit. Some of the controls on them have relaxed.
And that's a spray bottle, right?
Spray bottle. Hydrofluorocarbons are what cause the ozone holes. And in the southern hemisphere, they're getting worse again.
Mm. Blind rabbits and Terra del Fuego and all that.
Yeah. Australia they've already had a real problem in Australia because of sun cancer, skin cancer. And they have an ozone hole there. That's usually over the South
Antarctic,
Pole, but sometimes it goes over Australia, mm-hmm. and it's getting worse.
Let's talk about those poles for a minute. I mean, I keep hearing, this piece of ice fell off that was the size of Texas and so forth.
Yeah.
And what is that, Ice Shelf B or something?
Yeah,
it was
the Antarctic
terrible.
Ice Shelf, because it's water, it's over the water. Mm-hmm. So it melts faster.
As the water's warm underneath, it's going to melt from underneath.
Yeah, so it's melting from the bottom.
Right.
And when that ice shelf that's floating is released from the continent, the continental ice shelf starts to come off, and it comes off rapidly because the friction of the rock, mm-hmm. and just the heating, it causes it to kind of liquefy like an oil.
Yeah.
And it actually can shoot off into the water. It's amazing to see see that happen.
I heard somebody said something about the Arctic might actually, the mass there might actually disappear altogether.
It could. It has in the past.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think the one we need to worry about right now is Greenland.
Because?
Because it's got mostly continental ice. Mm-hmm. And gets into the North Atlantic, it's going to raise the water levels, and it's going to change the climate of North America and Europe.
Because of the currents.
Because of the currents.
I remember some years ago, they had this movie, it's called Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about. That.
Everybody laughs. But I saw the movie, and I thought, wow, that's really far-fetched. But it helped me to understand the thing about the North Atlantic current.
Right.
And if it warms up, then it stops because of the dropping of the saline water and so forth. Anyway, long story short, that thing stops as the water warms up, and that's what brings us our climate.
It completely changes the climate.
Yeah. It was
But the Day After Tomorrow was quite funny. We thought it was
hilarious. Well, it was a little accelerated, but now I hear everything's speeding up after all. So
they found mammoths with marigolds in their mouths.
Yeah.
Dropped dead because the temperature dropped very suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of rare.
Yeah, yeah. That speed is probably the flaw in the ointment. But the theory of it kind of makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
I think that it's more dramatic if you have the worst case scenario.
Yeah, of course. So as I recall, something about the water gets pushed north, and then the salt in the water causes it to drop in heaviness.
It's heavier, so it falls.
So it falls, and so that sucks more water north with the warm water. But as it becomes, the ice melts, the water becomes less salty.
Because it's saturated with just regular water.
Regular water from the ice caps and all, and then that stops the current.
It's funny because we are here because of the Gulf Stream.
Mm-hmm.
The Gulf Stream has been churning around the North Atlantic for hundreds of thousands of years, and that was the pathway to the Americas.
Yeah.
They picked up the Gulf Stream, boom, they're right here.
That's right, that's right. And then we have a similar thing here on the West Coast,
the
Pacific
current.
Ocean.
Yes, the Humboldt Current is slowing down already.
And does that have something to do with our La Niñas and El Niños?
No, it does have something to do with the crabs not being viable anymore.
Yeah.
If the Humboldt Current, which is a cold current and has a lot of nutrients, it's already slowing down. So there's less food.
Ah, so there's less food. Oh, okay. And so that also it's slowing down, so that's bringing us warmer weather up here. That's why we're hearing, sharks were sighted in a place they've never been before.
Right.
And things of that nature, too.
And the whales are having a rough time getting enough food.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the whole ecosystem's in flux.
Would another word be breaking down?
Yes.
I think
well,
so.
Well, you mentioned losing mm-hmm. the ice in the Arctic, and NASA has pictures of the Arctic going back many years and shows that every year the amount of sea ice is less. And this last February, for the first time ever, a sea transport, a ship, was able to cross the Arctic.
The Northern Passage.
Right. The fabled Northern Passage.
It's never happened before. So that's one of the effects of this heating. And that water is, of course, increasing the amount of water in the ocean. And the temperatures are all being affected, too. Now, at the beginning of the century, 21st century, the sea level had risen 8 inches. Mm-hmm. I do not have a current number. I know the latest things I've read are that it has still increased. And, of course, there's islands out in the Pacific that are disappearing or getting close to disappearing. Their populations are looking for new homes. I do not have, but it's still increasing. Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of the consequences. Low-lying population areas are going to be more in danger.
They're going to be inundated, and you're going to have more climate refugees. And you already have climate refugees. The people that died coming from North Africa, it was 100 people drowned yesterday or today. They're climate refugees. They're coming from North Africa because the desertification, they can't grow food. They're trying to get to Europe. They're dying in route.
And I can tell you, we have climate refugees right here in Brookings.
Well, I'm a climate refugee.
Yeah, I'm in real estate, and I get people all the time from Redding and the foothills, the Sacramento area. Mm-hmm. And you'd think the most of our influx would be from like L.A. or places like that.
It's too hot.
No, it's from that Inland Empire area where it's just so bloody hot, people can't take it anymore, and they come up here.
That's what we did.
Yeah.
2 months ago.
Yeah.
I could not go through another summer in the Sierra Nevada foothills. As much as I love it, and it's beautiful, I can't stand the heat.
Well, and we talk about sea level rise. It's not just, you know, little islands in the South Pacific that have a few hundred or a few thousand people on them, but many of our major cities are in the danger zones on the coasts, and not just here, but all over the world, because, of course, that's where the river mouths and this trade comes through to the rivers to move things inland and so forth. And so it was a natural thing for cities to build up that way, and now we're looking at some real disasters with millions of people being affected.
Yes, it's going to be, I think, in the next 10 years, well, we're already starting to see some warfare breaking out over water resources and climate refugees. It's going to get worse because, the whole East Coast of the United States, the Gulf area of the United States, those are all low-lying areas. Those people have to go somewhere. You've got Bangladesh, the entire country is low-lying.
Yeah, you've and Florida.
You've got Myanmar. The people in Myanmar are trying to survive on little tiny, they're a couple of feet away from the ocean, a couple of feet high. They're not going to make it. So it's going to get worse politically as well as climate-wise.
I saw a projection about Florida. I mentioned Florida,
because
the projection was amazing. It was like nothing left.
I think what's a high point in Florida is like 90 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole state is very, very low-lying.
Yeah, I think Key West is the highest point, 17 feet or something. Same with Victoria, B.C. It's very low-lying.
Well, wasn't the governor prohibiting people from mentioning climate change in Florida? And he's going to be directly impacted by it first and foremost?
Oops. Yeah, like oops, maybe that's not a really good long-term idea.
And not realistic. I'm just going to wish it away.
Right, whistling by the graveyard. Well, now we're really depressed. Well, anyway, so do we have a sense of the sea level rise? Like when we talk about Florida going under or major cities going under, like, of course, it's a gradual process,
right? It is
gradual.
Yeah,
you're trying to put those big locks outside of Venice and things like that.
We've been to Venice, and we saw how it's getting there.
I was there in October.
It used to be they'd have one or two high tide days a year. Mm-hmm. Now it's a couple high tide days a month.
Well, I remember being there in October, and it went from nice and sunny and dry to all the, you know, every little intersection has its little well and its little drinking fountain, and the water started gushing out of it.
That's not a good sign.
Filling up all the little plazas and piazzas and the main square there and everything, and they put up boards that you could walk on the boards to stay out of the water, and it was like 2 feet deep in St. Mark's Square.
Right.
I mean, it was crazy, and it was so weird. But, so there's
And it's
some
amazing how
there.
People become used to it. Mm-hmm. We get used to
this
things.
This is what we do. You know, it floods in October.
Because it's slow and it's gradual and we get used to it.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't.
Like a lot of things.
Well, yeah. You see the doors to the buildings down there, the ones that are
all metal.
At ground level, are all sealed at the bottom. They've got metal plates over them.
Uh-huh.
And the people that sell rubber boots over there make a fortune
a lot
during
of money.
These
see,
times.
See, there's always people that are going to be winners in the climate change, like the people that sell boots in Venice.
Right, there you go. Well, I know like a lot of those beautiful buildings on the canals, they've abandoned their lower floor. It's
That's
just
right.
too wet. They can't do it anymore. What are we talking about in terms of the future? I mean, people listen to all this and they go, I'm tearing out my hair here. What do I do? I mean, we've got things we can do, but let's assume that things remain the same sort of political status quo and we don't get our act together. How soon does it get that bad with these cities going underwater and being such... We've already got islands in the South Pacific that are going really quickly, almost gone.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking our generation, our kids' generation, 100 years from now?
I'm vested in the future. I have grandchildren, but I'm telling my grandchildren, don't have kids.
And don't move to Florida.
Just don't have kids because it's not going to be a very easy life.
Yeah.
We're going to have food distribution problems
mm-hmm.
because we're not going to be able to grow the food in the Central Valley of California or in the middle of the country. That's
right.
going to happen.
Right, between that and the aquifers, oh my goodness.
The aquifers are already in peril. Mm-hmm. And once you take water out of the aquifer in a lot of places, it collapses and there's no more aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
But... I hate to say that there's no hope because there's always got to be hope,
right.
Because people are ingenious.
That's true. So what are some of the ingenious or even smart things that we can be doing as individuals or as a country?
Move to Brookings.
Well, but then we have to drive our cars, right?
Yes.
Leah, I'm glad you brought this up because... A couple of points I want to make. The ocean level rise is not due to icebergs in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
An iceberg melting does not increase the height. And as Deb mentioned earlier, what happens is that when sea ice melts, it releases the glaciers, and those are the ones that create the rise in water.
Mm-hmm.
And they're flowing very rapidly right now.
So...
What do we do? I think we should continue to work toward reducing our carbon footprint. And many areas are still doing that. There are communities, for instance, that are going totally off the grid and have producing no carbon at all. I don't know if that's practical. That's important. We need to keep doing that. But more important is the question you raised, what about the future? And we're not planning well enough for that.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with all of these climate refugees? In Africa, many, many people can't grow any more crops, so they're leaving. And Libya is full of people waiting to cross the Mediterranean to try to find jobs. People are joining jihadist groups so that they can make some money to feed their families because their income is gone. Many of those people only had one crop lives, and now that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
We need to, in addition to controlling our emissions and being a more healthful civilization, we need to look seriously at the question you raised, very seriously. The scientists that are working on climate change, global warming, need to start looking at what do we do next. So we have to abandon the Keys, Florida Keys. So all of these other issues, we need to set up a scenario where we look at all of the dangerous things that are going to happen to our community now, even if they're just speculation. But we need to start looking at that because things are bad now. They're not going to get any better because the carbon dioxide is growing and it's going to be there for a couple hundred years. So we need to look at all of these possibilities and what's going to happen. My fear is that the resources will drop so significantly that the major countries will go to war.
That's happening already.
It is. And if we wait too long till the resources drop, we won't have choices that we have now.
We're cutting off our choices as we speak.
That's right.
Because we didn't act soon enough. Mm-hmm. We need to plan for a warmer future, for a different landscape. It's not going to be the same. So we need to make plans for that new geography, the new real way of being.
So what does that look like? We've got electric cars.
Right.
People are living in smaller homes. And but I can tell you right
those
now.
Those electric cars get power someplace.
That's true.
And the Bonneville Dam is vulnerable to earthquakes, volcanoes, and terrorists. So I think every city, every municipality needs to look at how they can generate small power stations. Mm-hmm. Solar, wind, wave. We've got to broaden our minds, and I think part of that is the next generation of students in college. They need to not be burdened by debt. I mean, it gets to be kind of a big picture where we need to grow our intellect. We need to have scientists and engineers that are looking at this problem like a moonshot. This is what we need to do.
It's a moonshot, isn't
it? It is a moonshot.
Just as tough as it was to do that.
The political will, we've got to put the money into it. And I don't see that happening right away, but we've got a couple of years before we're completely doomed.
But I do see some changes on the bright side in the fact, like I mentioned, I was in real estate. People that come to town now, you know, as soon as they get to the point where they can, when their kids are grown up, they're going, I don't want a McMansion anymore. That is not my idea of success.
Right.
I want a small, manageable home that, you know, lives lightly on the earth and is easy to take care of and doesn't require all this maintenance, because all that maintenance is another source of waste, and along with the fuel it takes to heat and all the rest of it. And people are changing in their values that way.
Yes, but they're not changing fast enough.
I know. That's the thing.
That's the thing. And I really do think we need to look at it as the biggest thing that's going to affect our nation is climate change. Not anything else. It's going to be climate change. Mm-hmm. And all the big picture things that come with it. Mm-hmm. The wars, the social services that aren't there anymore.
Right. Well, you talked about the refugees.
Refugees
but
are
you
big,
see all these
yes.
countries becoming very resistant to taking
right.
in
they
refugees.
They close their gates.
Lots of political parties that are now gaining strength because they're anti-refugee, anti-immigrant.
Right. The reactionists, the close the door people, like Hungary closed their doors. People were trying to get to Germany and they closed the door.
Yeah.
And trapped them there. And that's happening in this country. The anti-immigrant sentiments, mm-hmm. it's happening in this country.
Well, it's that feeling of, well, if we let all them in, you know, where's it going to stop? There won't be enough for me, right?
And one of those people may have the answer to some of our problems.
Exactly. Exactly.
You don't know.
You know, if I might just take
sure.
a second, let's look at analogous situations. Mm-hmm. When the scientists discovered that lead in fuel was causing problems for children, children's learning was affecting their brains, mm-hmm. they started on a publicity campaign. We've got to get the lead out of the fuel.
Right.
And would change right away, but that's not what happened.
Today.
But it did change eventually.
We don't even talk about that. If there's lead paint, we say you got to protect the kids. But it took over 40 years for them to make that change, and it was drastic.
I didn't realize it took that long.
Yeah. Look at cigarette smoking.
How
long did we know that cigarettes were bad for you before we made the change? And now, of course, we talk about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In 2006 was the first trial of a young man who was texting while he was driving, and he killed two people. And that trial was fought very hard by the cell phone people who make cell phones.
Oh, I bet.
Up until that time, it wasn't even hardly discussed. You can go ahead and use that. Now, there were scientists, neuroscientists, who were doing a lot of studying on this, and they were saying, it's distracting. You cannot use a cell phone and drive a car safely. And they were talking about that many years before the trial of this young man. That trial swung a lot of people, but it took so long to battle this community that was so stuck. So, yeah.
And we don't have that time.
And we don't like change. I mean, that's the human nature, right?
We don't like change.
Right?
And if there is
money to
be lost...
But if we take 40 years, then what? Forget about it, right?
If corporations are being affected, they're going to fight it. And I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't do that now. We have to turn around. We have to say, this is a problem. Everybody raise their hand. It's a problem. We've got to fix it. We can't keep arguing about this. I think we'd see more if there wasn't so much drama in Washington right now about non-issues. Mm-hmm. I think maybe we could settle down and start dealing with real issues. But it's just going to be hard. But we've got to find an answer for the way that people survive in this environment.
And people don't like to be. They'll do anything except be inconvenienced.
Well, here's that. But just before we run out of time, let's talk a little bit about things like the Paris Accord and what's happening both nationally and internationally politically around these kinds of issues. What are you seeing out there?
Well, of course, the Paris Accord was signed by every nation on Earth except the United States. Mm-hmm. And I need to correct that. It was signed by the United States.
And then unsigned.
And unsigned by we know who.
And by all of the other countries. Now, the agreement is that we will continue to meet our goal. You can't leave the Paris Accord for 4 years. If you decide to leave, it's going to take you 4 years to leave. So we're not going to leave until the election. One day after the election of 2020, we can actually leave the Paris Accord.
So what does the Paris Accord actually do and say?
It doesn't have teeth, for one thing.
Well, that's
a problem.
So what it does and says is it applies quotas to countries, mm-hmm, that says this is how much carbon dioxide you're delivering and you've got to stop it. It also assigns countries to help the poorer countries, which of course can't make these changes because they don't have the money. So mm-hmm, yes, we have to help the poorer countries reduce their carbon dioxide. We have to help them come on to a sustained life. Mm-hmm. Those are the two main characteristics of the Paris Accords, and the fact that everybody has signed on to them. I think the number is 187 nations.
I think Syria was the last nation to sign on, and they're...
Even Syria
signed.
My goodness. That's impressive.
Now, are they looking at the future as to what's going to happen when the climate gets really bad? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know of anybody that's really looking at that seriously. I hope somebody is.
Well, I know in local politics, like for instance in the town of Sebastopol, California, mm-hmm, they said they were going to be energy independent by X, I forget what year, maybe 2020 or 2025.
2025, I think.
And they're practically there already. They really made an effort.
Because they have a political will to do it.
Yeah.
We don't have the political will to do it.
Well, here in Brookings, historically, maybe
I think
not.
So.
But, Sebastopol can do it, and other little towns do it. It seems like the answer these days when the national politics are the way they are is to work locally and just deal with our... And besides that, decentralization is really good ecologically anyhow.
That's right.
It makes us more independent no matter what happens.
Right.
And Brookings is in kind of a sweet spot for and climate change. They put out a climate map, mm-hmm, of predictions as what's going to be really bad in your area.
Right.
And Brookings is kind of sheltered from some of the worst of it.
Yeah, I know. We're very lucky that way.
We have water, and we have climate that's mild, mm-hmm, moderate climate. Fires are going to be a problem.
Yeah,
but that's going to be a problem everywhere in the, mm-hmm, West.
I remember when we were having our fire, I had occasion to fly across Oregon from border to border, and those little tiny windows in the airplanes are not, 10 inches wide maybe. And there wasn't a moment that I couldn't see at least one fire. And much of the time, there were two or three in that little tiny window as we flew across Oregon. It was unbelievable, really amazing. Well, okay.
I want to be sure before we are finished to mention this book. It's called Drawdown.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the number one best book to reference as far as climate change is concerned. And there are 100 solutions in here that have been put together by many scientists. They're very, very well authenticated. If somebody is really interested in pursuing all of the different ways that we might treat this problem, Drawdown is the best book they can buy.
And is that for solutions for individuals or countries as a whole or both? Or
yes.
All of it?
Yeah.
It's by Paul Hawken is the editor. Paul Hawken.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they're short, pithy chapters, so mm-hmm. it's easy to read.
And are readily available on Amazon and everywhere.
It's readily available on Amazon.
Okay, that's good to know.
They mention nuclear energy as well. Mm-hmm. Because I think what we're looking at is interim steps,
right,
to where we're energy independent. And nuclear energy is not my favorite energy source. But
no, I used to think it was the bugaboo, but maybe something that is we're going to have to deal with at least for a while.
We have to take steps to get where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
They show the value in terms of money and in terms of the effectiveness of the solution of 100 different proposals. It's well thought out and gives a good history of what's happening.
So what are some of those solutions just off the top of your head that individuals can actually do here in Brookings that makes sense? We know cars is a big issue.
Park your car and walk if you can. Get a bicycle. There are now, I see a lot more bike lanes going in.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you healthier, too.
Mm-hmm. And a smaller home.
Smaller homes makes a lot more sense.
Is there more efficient heating that we could be doing?
Yes.
I mean, burning wood, I hear, is a bad thing now.
Burning wood is probably not the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And there are a variety of different ways.
And I'm asthmatic. So for me, particularly, it's not so good.
Yeah, not great. But there's different kinds of... Even amongst the heating solutions, there's different ones that are more efficient than
others. There's more energy-efficient stoves that burn wood more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Different stoves that are... pellet stoves are probably economical and pretty good for the environment, somewhat.
Better, anyway.
Better. I mean, there's any type of heating, any type of burning is going to be somewhat bad.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a...
Well, as I recall, somebody said that the heat pump... mode of electrical heating is one of the more economical ones.
It's the most economical for around here.
And I know those little oil radiators, as far as space heaters, are less energy demanding.
But they're dangerous.
They're dangerous?
Yeah, I think they're somewhat dangerous.
Really?
Yeah, they start fires.
Oh, I didn't know that. What else can a homeowner do or a citizen of Brookings that would be helpful? We've got the home
thing. Well, certainly going to LED lighting would be important. Mm-hmm. Anything that you can do to reduce your energy consumption. Now, we're mostly hydroelectric here, which is very low on the scale as far as use of electricity generating.
Mm-hmm.
For the average person, 1 kilowatt hour generates 1 pound of carbon dioxide.
Wow.
That's for the average. That's mm-hmm. from... gas and nuclear and all of that.
All sources.
Coal, burning coal, 1 kilowatt of coal electricity generates 2 pounds.
And there's different kinds of coal. There's anthracite coal and then there's dirty coal. Mm-hmm. But coal is coal. It's dirty.
It's a dirtier one for sure. Yeah.
And we don't have that problem. I think here in Brookings, though, it would be good if we could look at... Now, I'm told we can't go solar here.
Mm. I'm not sure that's true, though, because there's...
Partially solar
up in the hills. Mm-hmm. There's more sunshine, and the solar panels are much better than they used to be.
Well, you go a mile or two inland, and it's a whole different climate. So, yeah, I could see that being useful, at least mm-hmm. in that part.
And it would give us more energy independence, too, in case mm-hmm. of an emergency.
Right. You were saying, I think we interrupted
well,
you.
Well, the house we left was solar.
Yeah, we had solar.
And so we had almost no electricity usage at all. And because our car was a very small, fuel-efficient car, we actually met the 2 tons per person.
Really?
Yes.
So it's possible.
It was seriously compromising your lifestyle.
No.
Two people live in a very low impact lifestyle.
Yeah.
But a family would be harder.
And I know they have Energy Star appliances that are better.
Yeah, you get all
and
those.
They have windows that are better. And they have that LED rating system, silver, platinum, yada, yada. A lot of different materials that are less harmful and environmentally, which I assume translates into reducing the carbon footprint as well.
But Lee, I think one thing that people in Brookings need to do is get active. They need to find out what's going on in their own community. They need to go to meetings. They need to find out what their elected officials are doing for them and for the environment. That's important.
And can you speak to that at all off the top of your head, or is that just...
Well, we have our elected officials are the people that are going to speak for us. They're the ones that have the political will to act.
Yeah, but for sure.
I wish we had Curry County Climate Change Coalition. I wish we could form that.
We don't have anything like that?
I don't know of any.
Well, we should call you.
Yeah, we'll do it.
we'll give your phone number in just a minute.
Then we could have a group of people who would study these issues and could stay smart. And that's really critical. We need to know what's happening. And a group like that, I think, could stay smart and would propose things. Now, I mentioned briefly gardening. There's a type of gardening called no-till gardening, which not only doesn't generate carbon dioxide, but absorbs carbon dioxide. It's covered in this book, Drawdown. Mm-hmm. But if we could change our farming styles, we could actually suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
That's great. And then more independence, too, if we can manage that.
Yes.
And better food.
Yeah. Well, we are coming to the end of our time. I do want to, you know, get any resources out there that you want to share with people. And if they do want to form a coalition, if they wanted to get in touch with you and you'd be open to that, you could throw that in the mix. But I know you had some other things there that you read off earlier and perhaps some other resources beyond that. Would you like to share those?
Oh, there are a number. Yes, thank you very much. There are a number of websites for people who are interested in digging deeper into this problem. There are a number of websites. I would recommend four. climate.nasa.org, climatecentral.org, all preceded with www, by the way, co2.earth, and ipcc.ch. All of those are excellent websites to learn more about what's going on. They're well written by expert scientists.
Sounds good.
And they're proctored by scientists. Although some of them are government, and they've been politicized.
Yeah, that always seems to happen. Mm-hmm. Any other last thoughts as we come to a close here?
Well, we have grandchildren. Like I said, I invested in their future. I'd like to see them have a nice life, similar to what I've had. Mm-hmm. But I am telling them that I would rather they did not have children, because I think being a parent, having children could be a burden in the new environment, a real burden.
Well, it certainly is a time when we're going to have to reevaluate what's important and live accordingly, according to our lights in that area. I'll tell you, I learned so much tonight. I'm so pleased and happy and grateful that you came. This has been Lee Tooley, and with me is Ed Patterson and Deborah Worth. And this has been Reality Check on KCIW. Thank you so much, and thank you for listening.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.